Welcome back to Amerisogyny. I'm your host, Hannah Blue. You're listening to episode 58. Don't let go. I want to talk to you today about a subject I find deeply disturbing. It triggers me. Institutions. In episode 49, we discussed the top worst mental health facilities in the world. And it's downright embarrassing that most of them were in my country, the United States. Now it seems some lawmakers are entertaining the idea of reintroducing asylums and forcing them on people with mental illness. I think it's tragic, it's frightening, and I think it's greedy and malicious of state and federal governments to even entertain the idea, but it's not surprising. In episode 56, I told you, our country is fueled by greed. It was built on it. You see, I believe in telling the truth and not fabricating the idiotic idea that America used to be great. It wasn't. Not for anyone. Not women or immigrants. Yet especially people with disabilities and mental illness. I think this country has a lot of nerve to even think of forcing treatment on people with mental illness. People with disabilities and mental illness have been treated worse than trash in this country. They have been sterilized, experimented on, raped, murdered, beaten, all under the guise of proper mental health treatment. When in reality, a lot of people were locked up simply to get them out of the sight of able-bodied people. That's right, eugenics. Eugenics was used as justification for centuries of torture. Mental health care in this country is a joke. When it comes to budget cuts, funding for mental health treatment is usually the first to go. But when something happens, some of our government officials want to give thoughts and prayers and blame mental health. How can you blame people for having mental illnesses when you do nothing about it? The major question about how to handle mental health treatment is how to pay for it. Now, if you listened to episode 49, you know that America shut down most of its mental hospitals, and with good reason. It was called deinstitutionalization. Would you believe some are blaming this for mentally ill people being homeless? What a joke. Institutions are not the answer. They've never been. What is the answer? It's the one thing we have to fight to pry from the hands of our cold, dead government. It is one little word, two syllables, money. That's right. I'm going to share a story with you today that clearly proves my point. Building asylums isn't the answer. Making mental health treatment accessible in the communities, that is the answer. Here's some history. In 1955, 558,922 Americans were locked away in institutions. In episode 49, we talked about the movie One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. The book dropped in 1962. It took government officials and journalists teaming up to expose the atrocities of institutions in the U.S. And that's how the movement to reform mental health care began. We had a president who cared about people with mental illness. He had a sister with mental illness. He was a president of change, growth, compassion, and he was cut down in the prime of his life. His name was President John F. Kennedy. My opinion, had he lived, he would have pushed America into reforming mental health care with dignity and humanity. Well, Some people didn't want change, so they got rid of him. Rosemary Kennedy was younger than President Kennedy, and she'd been born with intellectual disabilities. For years, her own parents allowed her to be experimented on, and in 1941, at the suggestion of surgeons, her father, Joseph Kennedy, agreed to let her have a lobotomy. And if you don't know what a lobotomy is, it involves removing a section of your brain. Well, it was absolutely horrific for Rosemary. The doctors removed too much of her frontal lobe. And in a flash, Rosemary lost the ability to talk, walk, or control her bodily functions. Did Joe Kennedy have compassion on his daughter? No. He was embarrassed the secret might come out and had her institutionalized. And what did dear old daddy do? He lied to his family and the public about what really happened to her. In 1958, John Kennedy was a senator. He found his sister and went to see her in secret. And he was absolutely heartbroken by the treatment Rosemary had been subjected to. His sister's plight made President Kennedy a champion in fighting for people with mental disabilities. In 1963, he signed the Community Mental Health Act into law. The bill gave funding for research into mental health disabilities, and what's most imperative, it canceled the asylum system. Tragically, this would be the last bill President Kennedy signed into law. When he made the bill law, he said, "Under this legislation, custodial mental institutions will be replaced by therapeutic centers. It should be possible, within a decade or two, to reduce the number of patients in mental institutions by 50% or more." Because of this law and other changes to policy, by the 2000s, over 90% of people were no longer in institutions. And more than a few advocates for people with mental illness took their causes to court and won. And that made it even harder to lock away people with mental illness against their will. Kennedy and other advocates agreed that people with mental illnesses should have the freedom to live in their own communities and receive outpatient mental health treatment. So where did it go wrong? The Community Mental Health Act didn't give enough funding for outpatient treatment to replace institutions. When Congress gave control of the funding to states, only half of the health centers were built, and those that were built were very underfunded. And I can't leave out that President Kennedy was assassinated. I believe had he lived, he would have turned it around for people with mental illness, but he wasn't given the chance. I support Kennedy's vision. One person I've never supported, President Ronald Reagan. For over 20 years, as governor and president, he made it a single-minded mission to cut funding to community health centers. And as a result, far too many people with mental illnesses are now in prisons or swinging through the revolving door of ERs, or they ended up homeless. In episode 35, I told you California was the number one state for forced sterilizations. And as a result, they had to pay the victims and their families. Well, it seems California hasn't learned from its past dirty deeds. They passed Proposition 1, and its strongest supporter was their governor, Gavin Newsom. Now, the ACLU opposed this measure, and rightfully so, because it would remove funding from community health organizations and provide funding for forced treatment and institutionalization of people with mental illness. California. Police in California didn't have common sense enough to take a 15-year-old child with autism in safely. They shot him down like a dog. People love to cluck their tongues and talk about the horrors of Adolf Hitler in Germany. But let's talk about the American eugenics movement, shall we? Let's dig up some dirt in our own backyard. People with disabilities were described as bacteria, mongrels, subhuman. Oh yeah, look it up. They were sterilized and locked away in institutions all over the country, especially in California. And Gavin Newsom has the nerve to support a bill that would forcibly institutionalize people with mental illness instead of putting funding back into his communities. Shame on you for Proposition 1. Shame on you, Newsom, for taking away much needed funding for public mental health. The audacity of you to force people with mental illness into institutions against their will. How about channeling money into a bill that would cap your rent prices or make mortgages affordable for people in California? No, you can't do that. You'd rather spit on the rights of people with mental illness. Shame on you. In episode 49, I also told you about people in New Jersey's modern day asylums that were raped and beaten up, not given proper treatment. That's right. Ask those poor victims how being locked up in modern day asylums worked out for them, huh? Some government officials in this country are trying to take us back to the dark ages. But to you, especially parents of people with mental disorders and disabilities, I say, don't let go of your loved ones. Do not give your governments the power to decide where they live and where they receive treatment. The atrocious way people with disabilities and mental disorders have been treated in this country makes my skin crawl. Reinstitutionalization shouldn't even be an idea. Locking up people in chains, forcing lobotomies and sterilizations on them. That all happened right here in this country in asylums. And now we have a few idiotic Democrats and Republicans trying to use mentally ill people being homeless as an excuse for bringing back institutions. Here's what Congress can do. Why don't you stop giving yourselves raises? Let's start there. But you see, I already told you in episode 56, this country is so greedy. It puts money first. Money is far more important than the needs of the people. Congress doesn't need raises, and they don't need to be trading stocks. Here's a bit of research. A study was done in Santa Clara, California. Here's the findings. If homeless people were given permanent housing and community-based services, there was an 86% success rate in battling homelessness. How about that? We don't need to look to institutions. Would there be a small population of people still living on the streets? Yes, but they would be living in their communities, not institutions. There is no such thing as a modern, more humane version of a mental asylum. Remember all of those people locked away in New Jersey's psychiatric hospitals? I think that proves it. Torturing Americans isn't going to solve a damn thing, but spending money will. Putting services back into the communities will. Let me prove my point even further. Let's take a detour from California to my state, North Carolina. When it comes to parenting, there is no group that I respect more than parents of children with higher specialized needs. They know how to get the job done. Here's the story of Samantha Roney. At 27 years old, Samantha was admitted to the J. Iverson Riddle Development Center. It's an institution in North Carolina that has 285 beds. Tim and Dana Roney were forced to admit their daughter because their MCO, Partners Health Management, started cutting her services and denying higher rates of pay for the workers who provided her specialized care. They also refused to allow Samantha's parents to supplement her care when workers couldn't be found. The MCO called this process fading, an effort to save money. They had the idea that someone could get rehabilitation services, and once stabilized, the services could be faded, But for people with permanent developmental disabilities like Samantha, reducing services is unrealistic and also dangerous. The Ronies wanted to keep their daughter at home. Samantha was happy at home, playing the keyboard and enjoying her music, dancing to her favorite songs and music videos. Her parents took her to restaurants, water parks, and concerts, and made sure she had her favorite foods and drinks, cheese, pizza, sweet tea, and bologna. Samantha's grandparents are heroes, too. Her mother's brother was born with disabilities, and the doctors told her parents they should put him in an institution at birth. They said no way. He is now 63 and is still living with his family. Well, the Ronies began to fight for their daughter's right to stay at home. They appealed the cuts and denials. They even took the MCO to court, and they lost. Tim said, "It still bothers me today. I kept telling them she's gonna have to go to an institution, and they just didn't care. The whole system is just messed up." And he noted, keeping Samantha at home would have been so much less expensive than in an institution. These parents never gave up on their daughter. It took 7 years, a lot of tears, and a lot of prayer, and finally suing the state of North Carolina to get their daughter out of the Riddle Center. Samantha was excited to move into a home where she has the support she needs and lives in the community. They even decorated her new room with her favorite Cabbage Patch dolls. She's so cute. She deserved to be fought for, and her parents did just that. In 2017, they hired Disability Rights North Carolina and sued the state of North Carolina. And guess what? They won. As a result of their victory, thousands of people who are institutionalized or at risk of being institutionalized will now have better and brighter futures. The judge presiding over the case ordered North Carolina to follow the law and provide alternatives to institutions. Dana says, "I just want people to know you can fight. You can, you can, you can." I want to make it clear. It took these parents taking the state of North Carolina to court. According to Samantha's parents, partners, their MCO, didn't give a damn about people with special needs. Here's some facts in the case. The state of North Carolina was advised and even warned it needed to comply with the law and give disabled people services if they risked institutionalization and wanted to remain in their homes and communities. And according to the Ronies, nothing was done to help Samantha. By January 2015, they were forced to admit their daughter to the Riddle Center. Here's what broke my heart. When her mother signed and dated the admission papers, she wrote, "We have no choice but to sign." And her father is equally as intelligent. He wrote an addendum to the admission paperwork and required that it be included so the record would reflect that it was not their choice to admit their daughter. He wrote, "Samantha's behaviors have not gotten worse. The reason the guardians are requesting this placement is partners, that's the MCO, refusal to approve the proper level of service in her natural home. Therefore, she must go from the least restrictive setting to the most restrictive setting in order to assure her health and safety. Even though the guardians believe that Samantha can still benefit from the correct level of services provided in her natural home, there is no choice but to place her at JIRDC due to the continued denials of requested services by partners." The Ronies never chose for Samantha to be admitted into an institution. They said Samantha needed the resources channeled into the facility. And what this means is the resources that facilities have, they felt they needed to have access to the same services in the communities, and I agree. They said the state should make those resources available to people in the communities to help them stay in their homes, day programs, caregiver training, and respite care. And they're absolutely right. The Ronies are praying, people. Her mother said, "I believe in my heart Samantha is in a beautiful home because God is giving her a blessing for all the trials she had to endure. I want people to know Samantha. I want people to see the beautiful side of her. And I want the state of North Carolina to wake up and offer support to others. The state would actually save money if they would offer the support." Dana said, "I don't want anyone to think we're done. This is just the beginning." Tim and Dana Roney want people to know about their struggles and their joys, and they want their daughter Samantha to serve as a beacon of hope for other people and families who are struggling. They wish everyone could witness Samantha's infectious smile and laugh and know her as they know her. Look up the story of Samantha R. versus the state of North Carolina. Now let me tell you what they won. This case was filed in May 2017, and it challenged the lack of adequate home and community-based services for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. On November 2, 2022, Superior Court Judge R. Allen Baddour entered an injunctive relief order. In February 2020, the court found that the state of North Carolina violated the rights of people with IDD to live in integrated settings if they chose. The judge has given North Carolina time to develop a plan for correcting its violations of the state integration mandate. This is the state law version of the Olmstead case. North Carolina failed to show that it has a plan to address serious and persistent gaps in its IDD system. It also failed to address if it had any specific measurable goals to fix those gaps. Judge Baddour issued an order in 2022 for DHHS to fix these issues, but the state appealed. According to Disability Rights, the state dropped its appeal once a consent order was in place. Tim Roney says he's worried the consent order is watered down from the more aggressive original order, but understands that if Disability Rights went ahead with the appeal process, the result could be no solutions at all. He says his family has dealt with the state for 30 years, and he knows the state will not do anything unless forced. What he and Dana would like to see is for North Carolina to get people off the wait list for services and build the workforce to provide services, as well as support existing community-based service organizations. Here's a couple of benchmarks in the consent order. According to the consent order, North Carolina is to transition 249 people with intellectual and developmental disabilities out of institutions and into community-based services by the end of June 2027. North Carolina is also required to increase access to community-based services and direct support professionals. And the responsibility of this lies with North Carolina's MCOs. Now, Tim Roney says he doesn't have a lot of faith in North Carolina to be able to meet the benchmarks in the consent order. But thanks to the Roneys, people with disabilities in North Carolina now have a fighting chance. I want to reiterate, North Carolina did not do this on its own. It was forced to do this because the Roneys stood up for their daughter. And I thank them. And so should every parent of a child with a higher specialized need, because their win is our win. And Newsom isn't the only politician I want to call out. The mayor of New York City, Eric Adams, he had the nerve to introduce a pilot program that would give police the power to put people with mental illnesses in hospitals against their will. The NYPD, you know what that makes me think of? When a 75-year-old man was pushed to the ground by two Buffalo police officers. They split his head open like a walnut and left him lying on the ground to bleed. His name was Martin Giugino. And why was he pushed? He was out past curfew. Let me tell you something. NYPD and LAPD have the worst reputations of excessive use of force in this nation. And this is who Eric Adams believes should have the power to make decisions for people who are mentally ill? Sickening. The racist, rapist, parasite Donald Trump also believes in asylums. In a video posted on his campaign website, he said, "When I am back in the White House, we will use every tool, lever, and authority to get the homeless off our streets. And for those who are severely mentally ill and deeply disturbed, we will bring them back to mental institutions where they belong, with the goal of reintegrating them back into society once they are well enough to manage. Where they belong is in the community with the rest of us, you ignorant maggot." Just the thought of anyone agreeing with him, like California's Governor Gavin Newsom, makes me sick to my stomach. Well, folks, I have given you a problem and the solution to solve the problem. And I'm going to say it again for the parents. Don't let go of your children. No government should ever have the power to place your children in institutions against their will. And not just parents. Brothers, sisters, cousins, aunts, uncles. You have a responsibility to stand up with your family members who may have mental disorders or disabilities. The last thing this country needs to do is to turn the clock back on asylums, and you don't have to let them. I want you to be inspired by the stories of Rosemary Kennedy and the Ronies, especially the Ronies. Use their fight as a guide to inspire you to stand up for what's right. Locking away people in institutions isn't the answer. I wanted to bring you stories on people with disabilities in developing countries, but I couldn't even find data. And there's a reason for that. Lynn Featherstone is a parliamentary undersecretary in the UK, and she says, "It's a sad truth that in many developing countries, people with disabilities simply don't count. No data is collected on their disabilities nor their abilities. So it's as if they just don't exist. About 1 billion people, that's 15% of the world's population, are disabled. They are often neglected in society. 21 Blue Lash is seeking to change that. To us, no matter what country you live in, no matter where you are, I want you to know you exist. We see you. You matter." I had an appointment at the eye doctor the other day, and I saw a lady. She was pushing an elderly lady in a wheelchair, and she had a young man behind her. He was using a walker. He had blonde hair and brown eyes. And as soon as he saw me walking up, he got excited. Now, I had never seen this young man before, or the elderly lady. I had never seen these people before. He was making vocalizations because he's nonverbal. But when he saw me, he said, "Hey, hey." I said, "Hey, how you doing?" And oh my God, he started screaming. He was so happy. He was so excited that I acknowledged him. And you know what I did? I started screaming right along with him. I don't care who was looking at me as if I was crazy. We were both excited to see each other. And we were strangers. But let me tell you why that happened. There are two groups of people I firmly believe you cannot fool on this earth. That is little babies and people with higher specialized needs. They see who you are from the inside. They know if you're a good soul or not. And let me tell you something. If I was a trash woman, that young man would not have responded to me. He wouldn't have even looked me in my eye, but he did respond. And that made me so happy. It humbled me to be recognized by one of God's chosen people. And make no mistake, this young man has a first seat in heaven. He's not going to have to stand before God on Judgment Day like I will. And for him to acknowledge me, that humbled me more than you can even imagine. Shout out to him and the lady that was taking care of them, I wish him all the best. Thank you for making my day so special. I want to leave you with one final note. This could be for parents or anyone who loves someone with a disability. Advocacy isn't a library book you turn in once your child reaches chapter 18. It's not a badge you turn in after 35 years of decorated service. To be an advocate is a lifelong position. You won't make many friends along the way, and you don't get to retire. You know when you stop advocating for people with disabilities? When you die. And that's just that. I'll leave you with a story. This episode inspired me to tell it, and I think it's time. I used to be a home manager in Youngstown, Ohio, my hometown. I'm not going to say the name of the facility because I don't know if some of my staff still work there. But the experiences I had, I'll never forget the people that I met there. After I graduated from college, I went to work for this organization, and I had 8 ladies that I was responsible for. They ranged in ages. I think 2 were in their 20s and the rest were in their 50s and 60s. I had a demonic program manager. She tried to pit me against one of the staff during orientation. I had never laid eyes on this lady. And I'm telling you this story for many reasons, but one is to caution you. When someone comes and talks to you about a certain person, don't automatically believe them. Get to know them for yourself. Well, they talked of this lady, acted like she was just terrible and awful and disrespectful. Well, they wanted me to write her up for a toilet not being cleaned. She worked midnights. And I said I wasn't going to do that because we had a lady, I refuse to call them clients or residents. We had a lady who was an insomniac. She stayed up all night. And I told this program manager, I said, I'm not going to write the staff up because I don't know if I'll call her Victoria. I won't use her name. I don't know if Victoria might have came down during the night and used the bathroom. Oh, the program manager got mad at me. She turned beet red. I'll call her Julia. I can't stand her ass to this day, but I digress. My shift was ending. And it was early morning, and the staff member she tried to pit me against, I'll call her Betty. She was sitting at one of the tables, and her back was turned to me. She always kept her hair so cute. So I said, girl, that's some bad hair. Meaning, your hair looks fabulous. That's slang, you guys. And she turned around and she said, thank you. And from then on, she and I became friends, and she was one of my best employees. I noticed when she came on the clock, the ladies were calmer, and they were calmer when I was there as well. Well, the program manager, Julia, didn't like that at all. She also didn't like me trying to educate the staff during our meetings. And I said to her, you want these women, I had all women, to come in here and take care of these ladies, but you don't want them to know about psychiatric disorders? You don't want them to know the difference between developmental disorder and a psychiatric disorder? That's crazy. So Julia would sit in on my meetings when I tried to educate my staff. Here's where it hit the fan. One of my ladies, I'll call her Lillian. She had a spin down. And if you don't know what a spin down is, it's a requirement by Medicaid. If a person has a certain amount of dollars in their bank account, you have to spend it. And I think that's so unfair because it's saying that because you have a disability, you have to be poor. Well, she had $10,000 to spend down. So I went to Ashley Furniture in Borman and I saw a bed that cost $3,000. And when I tell you, listeners, that bed was out of this world. It was so beautiful because if there's one thing I have is taste. Taste in clothes, taste in furniture. Okay? The bed was brass and it was canopied. Oh my God, it was beautiful. So I said, I'm going to get this bed for her. And I had $7,000 left to spend. I bought a fancy coffee maker for her. I bought nice clothing. And I had the bed delivered to the group home. Now, I was already being watched because here's another lesson for you. Corrupt people do not like people who are incorruptible. Why? Because if you have no dirt on you, it's easier for you to uncover dirt on others. And what I mean is, it's easier to expose the things that they do. Well, I walked in there clean and I walked out of there clean. I got called into the office and I'm thinking it was because I had wrote somebody up and they were questioning it. They did that a lot because there was just a few bad staff there. They didn't care about the ladies. Some staff cared about the ladies and some didn't. And that's just the truth. And one I could not stand. I think her name was Shanice or Shanice. I could not stand her. And she told one of my ladies while they were eating, one of my ladies, she didn't want cottage cheese. And she told her, "You're being real difficult today." And I looked at her and I said, "Don't you ever speak to her like that. She has the right not to eat cottage cheese if she doesn't like it." She tried to get smart and get loud. She was one of those people. She had a lot of masculine energy. Let's just put it like that. She thought that if she got loud, others would be intimidated by her because the ladies were intimidated by her, I learned. And so when she got loud, I said, "No, ma'am, you're not going to raise your voice to me either. So I'll tell you what, you meet me down in my office because I'm going to write you up for talking to her in a way that I don't like, a way that's disrespectful. And I'm going to write you up for insubordination." And I did. She kept going to the office on me. Because I stayed on her. I was not going to allow those ladies to be mistreated while I was manager. And some of them knew it and they didn't like it. So when I got called to the office, I thought that's what I'm being called for her or one of the others. Well, no. The executive director wanted to know why I bought my lady a $3,000 bed. And I told her because she had $10,000 and I still have $7,000 left to spend. She pointed to a sales paper and pointed to it wasn't even a bed. It was a head rail and a foot rail for $199. Now, I had saw that when I went in the store, but I overlooked it. I didn't even entertain getting her two cheap railings for $199. She said, "I want you to have that bed taken down and taken back to the store. And I want you to buy her this bed." And I said, "Why?" And she said, "Well, what is she going to do with a $3,000 bed?" I said, "A lot more than she can do with a bed for $199. I said, "I'm not taking the bed back." She said, "Excuse me?" I said, "I'm not taking the bed back." I said, "I'm home manager at number 5. You might be the executive director, but you don't have a cause as to why the lady can't have the bed." After that, they made things so difficult for me. They scrutinized every single thing I did. Before I knew it, I was having checks about medications, the food we were serving, everything. Even though we passed our audits, even though the ladies were happy with me, even though the paperwork was done on time and there wasn't one dime that could not be accounted for. I was that good at my job. So one day I got tired of them and I told my nurse, which I shouldn't have because she was a snake. I said, "It's okay because I'm moving to North Carolina in a couple months anyway." Well, she went back and told the front office. And when she did, I was summoned to the office and I was fired. And I was given the reason, it's just not gelling. Now, Ohio is an at-will state. They don't have to give you a reason as to why they fired you. But here's the deal. They fired me because I would not take the bed back. And they fired me because they knew I would never take a dime from those people that I was entrusted to care for. I was in North Carolina maybe 3 or 4 months when my staff, the same staff they tried to pit me against, she called me and she said, "Hannah, they took back Lillian's bed. I said, what? She said, girl, yes. And all I could think of was, Lillian, either they came to dismantle the bed while she was there, or she returned from workshop and saw that it was no longer there. Either way, it broke my heart that they did that to her, because this woman couldn't speak and she had an intellectual disability. And that was probably her one comfort, that she had a nice bed that she can lay down in and take a nap whenever she wanted, because I allowed that when I was there. I didn't want them sitting around like little robots and coloring like kids. I sent them to the Butler Art Museum, and one of the staff tried to argue me down, and she knows it. But guess what? She didn't win. They went to the Butler Art Museum as long as I was manager. It still breaks my heart when I think about how she must have felt when she returned home and saw that her bed wasn't there. So they hired another home manager, a manager that did not give a damn about those ladies. She actually let one of my ladies elope from the house and walk down the street. She could have been hit by a car. She had no idea where she was going, but this is what they wanted. Someone who was evil and didn't care about the ladies and corrupt like them. And you know what my staff told me? Julia didn't attend any of her meetings. You know why? Because the new home manager was trash, just like her. That following year, another lady had a spin down. My staff called me again. And I'm calling her my staff because, you know, I don't want to slip and say her real name. They stole a coat from this lady. Yeah, that's right. They went and bought her a new coat and stole it. Yeah, none of that happened on my watch. I have always been against institutions, but that experience working for that organization let me know that no person should ever be in an institution or group home if the families can help it. Because we have people who just do not care about people with disabilities. They don't care. That's been over a decade ago, you guys, and I have never forgotten those 8 ladies. Some have passed on, but you know what? I never will forget them. They touched my heart in ways you can only imagine. I miss them and I love them still. I'll never forget them. And I don't want you to forget any of the crucial information I gave to you in this episode. Don't let go of your loved ones. Don't let go of your friends. Do not give any federal or state government the power to lock away people in institutions, because they can be cared for right at home, right in their communities. And with that, folks, I'm out of time. If you learned anything from this episode, feel free to follow me on Podbean, Samsung, Spotify, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and more. The weekend is approaching, and I want you guys to be safe and happy. And don't forget to hug the people you love and keep their environment safe. Be easy. Have a good weekend. Take care of yourselves. And as always, God bless.